I'm Kier from In Defense Of, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and I have a couple of other reporters for this episode number 194 of the Starling Tribune. We're going to start off with Chris.
You're lucky you don't work for me.
True, and I'm glad you work for me. And Michelle.
Call me honey again, and I might only break your leg.
For the record, I don't think I've ever called you honey.
No, you have not.
Okay.
You're a wise man in that regard.
This podcast is recorded on Sunday, April 22nd, 2018, live via Geeks.live.
That's right, SP, and this evening we'll be discussing Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and very well will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the greater universe, including shows like The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and who knows what else they're going to add.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com. We can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. I think we're done with the introductions. I think we need to get into the meat of the episode. So, Michelle, why don't you break down the episode for us?
Sure thing. This episode is called The Dragon. It's season 6, episode 19. It aired Thursday, April 19, 2018. Directed by Gordon Buerhoel, who has done 4 episodes of Arrow and 2 of Andromeda. And written by Elizabeth Kim, who's written 2 Arrow and 4 Freedom Fighters The Ray. And Spiro Sketsos, who's done 3 Arrow and 3 Grimm.
Now, I did watch all the episodes this week on the CW app. And I did see a commercial for Freedom Fighters, The Ray, and it was an interestingly done commercial where it said that the heroes on your Earth are not the heroes on Earth X.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, but it was, and then in comes The Ray and he's saving the day and that sort of stuff. So it's pretty cool if you haven't checked it out on the CW seed. So this episode aired last week, of course, as did 3 other DCCW TV shows, and started off with the return of Supergirl on Monday night, the 16th of April, with a live rating of 1.91, and that's a little low for Supergirl. The title of the episode, I thought was a great pun, Shot Through the Heart, of course, talking about the shot that's, you know, on the show, S-C-H-O-T-T. And it was the 14th episode of the third season. On Tuesday, there was a full slate of Flash and Black Lightning. Flash, with their 18th episode of the fourth season, Lose Yourself, had a live rating of 1.88. And maybe we'll talk about that later. It really didn't resonate with me. On Tuesday, Black Lightning had their season finale. It was the 13th episode of the first season. Shadow of Death, The Book of War, to a live rating of 1.68. And then Thursday, the 19th of April, Arrow aired The Dragon, which had a live rating of 0.96. Now, if you round up, it's 1, but it's still 0.96. And to our knowledge, there was no preempting for any sports games that we know of or national emergencies. So that's kind of a disappointing rating.
Yeah. The last time we had that 0 with Brothers in Arms, it had that live rating of 0.87, but it had that like weird sports thing in some areas. The live plus 7 ratings for that came in and it came to a total of 1.74. However, that is the lowest live plus 7 of the season.
Sounds like it's very difficult to recover from a sub 1 live rating.
So do we think it has anything to do with the fact this is the first episodes that have aired since the changing of the guard when it comes to showrunners has been announced, or is that just a happy coincidence?
I'm wondering if people, they've heard that it's been renewed, and they're like, oh, we're not leading up to big, some sort of like series finale, and it's going to be on Netflix anyway, so I don't have to worry about it not finishing, so I can just wait.
I think some of it might go back to the fact that we are entering into final season, believe it or not. Mid-April is when finals start in colleges. Not all of them, just some of them. So I think there's some of that. I think there's some of the weather is finally turning in some parts of the country. So you got people outside doing stuff. So I'm not shocked and surprised about the low rating. I wouldn't think it would be this low. And I do think there is something to be said about not the renewal, but the change of showrunners, which we will talk about later. But I definitely think that's going to impact the rest of the season.
Makes sense to me.
All right. So with that, we're going to shelve the ratings talk for a while. And we're going to get into this episode called The Dragon. So, Michelle, what's the overall theme?
Well, let's see. Ricardo Diaz calls himself the Dragon. This is called The Dragon. This is all about Ricardo Diaz.
It must have been because of a special thing that happened at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, Chris, you actually spot these better than I do, and you really pay attention to the logo. What happened to the logo this week?
This week, it's the same as the tattoo on the side of Diaz's neck. It's the dragon.
How did you feel about no arrow thing at all?
Well, at first, I kind of scratched my head, and then once we got about 20 minutes into the show and I hadn't seen Green Arrow once, I went, oh, this is where we're going with it this week.
But the show isn't called Dragon. The show is called Arrow. And even if you don't have Arrow spotlighted as a main character, you still need to spotlight that this is Arrow show. Otherwise, call the show something else.
His name is still the show. I mean, Green Arrow is in the show for what, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes? It's all about Diaz this week, and I think that's the message they were trying to convey. I'm kind of okay with it because they've already established the trope of, let's put the logos of the main characters this week in the credits.
Well, this is the first week that Oliver Queen is not mayor, so he's got nothing going on during the day. It's just him being the Hood, being Green Arrow, being the Arrow, whatever you want to say. And he should be busy doing stuff. And he is. But, you know, judging by what's happening in this episode, whatever he's doing is totally not important. He's having a really bad week because in the end of the episode, what he does doesn't really even matter to the criminal enterprises.
Right. I think that's part of what we're seeing this season is most of what he's been doing doesn't really matter to the criminal enterprises. They're so far behind everything.
Hey, there was that great scene where we see the Green Arrow blow stuff up, and kudos to Stephen Amell's body double, stunt double, and the second unit team. That explosion looked really cool on the TV in the show.
It did indeed. I was thinking about that, and yeah, it was just showing that the Hood was out there doing something. I will go back to calling him the Hood because that's what he wants to be doing right now. He wants to be the lone wolf, so I'll just call him the Hood. There were some important fights that happened in the criminal enterprises, two in particular that I can think of, and we get to see those, which were good, but you had a lot of, unfortunately, wig action going on with Laurel, so you knew it wasn't her. And then you'd get the quick cut to her and you saw her, you know, close up punch guy in the face or something like that. But there were some good fights. It just didn't have the arrow in it.
That's true. So since it's Ricardo show this week, we get a little flashback 32 years ago. We find out he's been an orphan. He's got a bully. And now that he's all grown up, he wants to be a part of the Quadrant. It's a new underground criminal organization. I don't mind that we've never heard of it before. It's an urban legend. That's fine. You know, it's the Court of the Owls. It's the Night Circle, whatever. It's just another one. I had no problem just hearing about him now. And it's interesting that this takes place in Bloodhaven, that we're not even in Star City this week. It's in Bloodhaven. I thought that was interesting.
It was a nice callback to having had Bloodhaven references in the first couple seasons. And if you've read the comics, you know when Nightwing went to Bloodhaven to go out on his own, it was a dirty, disgusting, nasty city run by crime empires where arguably you would have somebody like this or some organization like this set up because it's the perfect place to have a criminal enterprise based out of.
Yeah, so he has Black Siren with him in the wig that SP alluded to earlier. And we learned that he's been working on this 5-year plan and everything's coming to fruition. And what he wants a meeting. Now, SP, Diaz actually had a non-bloody path, correct?
A non-bloody path?
Yeah, because he just wanted a meeting, right? I mean, did he actually set out to just gun everybody down?
No, he wanted to trade, basically, the capability to do criminal things, major criminal things in Star City for free of charge, no tax or anything, for a seat at the table. That's all he wanted. And the four members of the Quadrant weren't very receptive of that when they eventually were told, but they weren't told because the one guy that Diaz had communicated with didn't tell anybody else that this was a thing. And they all thought of him just as a thug.
Something that he's not wanting to be. I mean, he's got the criminal muscle to do things, but he wants to be acknowledged for his skill and having basically set everything up in Star City and not for being the guy that just goes and beats the tar out of people to get his way.
Yeah, so Cartier sends his son, Junior. I know he has another thing, but I just called him Junior. And Chris, what does Junior have Diaz doing?
He has him going out to basically go recover a man who has been lost, basically doing grunt work.
It's really interesting that the writers had her doing this running commentary throughout the entire episode. I know Katie Cassidy did her best to try to make that interesting, but again, it's the writers having her do this commentary, how she's telling him, oh, fetch, roll over, doing the dog thing and stuff. But not only does he have to find the guy, Junior has him go fetch. And SP, what did you think of that first fight where...
In the FBI safe house? Yeah.
Yeah, go into the safe house.
That was a really good fight. I really enjoyed it. It was obvious that it was stunt people all the way around. There was no main characters that were actually in there doing it. And every once in a while, you'd have Laurel or Diaz in their close-ups doing one or two moves and then it would flip over. So it wasn't the big stereotypical long shot arrow fight, but it was a good toe-to-toe thug fight, and these two were able to take out all these FBI agents and then get Baylor out. And you know this is not going to go well because it's assumed that Baylor, because he's out smoking and joking with the FBI agents, that he's actually squealed and whatever. And if I was the criminal enterprise, I don't think I would have trust him in FBI custody anyway. So you kind of knew he was doomed. When they walked out together, though, I knew what was going to happen is that they both were going to get shot. And I had hoped that Diaz had a vest on of some sort. And he did. And Laurel asked him the obvious question, look, what if they shot you in the head? And he said, well, I would have been dead. And yeah, that's true. So he is taking some risk, probably some unnecessary risk. And he did admit later that this was not part of his plan, that he did not know that they were going to try to shoot him. He's overestimating his importance, at least to the Quadrant. Now, this is rectified later, and Diaz has to manipulate his way through the rectification, but it does show that he does and can miscalculate.
Yes, he's fallible. That's one of the big things. And we've kind of had instances in the past with Arrow villains where they were seemingly infallible until it was convenient. I mean, look at how they've portrayed Diaz this season. Everything that he's planned has fallen into place, but now they're showing, no. He just had an opportunity to plan. He had an opportunity to study, to know what he was doing. Here you've got him in something that's a little more unknown what's going to happen. He's got an idea, but not 100% solution how things come together. And you can see that without that extra time to plan and observe, it's not the greatest of plans, but he thinks quickly on his feet, which makes you wonder how this might proceed back in Star City when he goes back to his area where he's been setting things in motion for over a year.
Yeah, he does think on his feet. And one of the reasons why he's able to is because of Black Siren. Because she actually says, well, how come you didn't bring backup? And he looks at her and he's like, I did.
Good line.
Yeah, it's interesting how, because what gets me, it's like, it's almost like the plot line of her pretending to be the real Laurel has gotten shelved. I mean, maybe that's why she's wearing the wig, because maybe she's famous right now for coming back from the dead. I don't know. That seems to have gone nowhere. But she's still in league with Diaz and going along with everything. So it's just interesting to notice that that plot line, I have no idea where that plot line went for this episode.
Well, we did get to see a little bit at the end where she says, I didn't think anybody was supposed to know Laurel was working with the dragon. So there was a nod to it, but it was all the way at the end of the episode. And quite frankly, this is all the way at the end of the season. I would have loved to have gotten a lot of this background of Diaz, including his time at the orphanage and flashbacks throughout the season. I know that would have kind of minimized Caden James and Michael Emerson's role in the early part of the season. But as I said before, they could have done flashbacks with him too. He's really good at it from his time with the other two shows that he's done of note, like Lost and the AI show. Which
Person of Interest?
Yes. So I think the loss of the flashbacks this year, while I understand why they were trying to move away from that, I think that that was a loss in this entire season. And it really shines in this particular episode, and it shined in the last episode that Michael Emerson did as Caden James as well.
I think once the dragon was revealed as the bad guy, that's when they should have started delving a bit into his past so that we could better understand his motivations. I think I understand what they were trying to go with, which was, ooh, Ricardo Diaz, he's this mysterious guy. We don't understand things. But the problem is, and I'm not trying to be super critical, and I know it's going to come off that way, we're on episode 19. We're just now beginning to understand the villain here. And if you go and look at the previous seasons of Arrow, you tend to understand the villain's motivations and things like that much earlier on. Yes, I know we had a twist where Diaz was pulling the strings behind the scenes and we didn't know he was the big bad, but that reveal was what, the mid-season finale? Somewhere around there. We've had a lot of time where we could have started learning more about the character, and I enjoyed learning more about the character. Like SP said, I think sprinkling some of these flashbacks in earlier in the season might have helped out, because at this point, I'm like, okay, you've established all these things with Team Arrow breaking up, Oliver going off on his own, and we're not going to touch any of that this week other than a brief interlude. We're going to talk all about the dragon. It felt a little jarring to me.
Especially when it's Quentin's first week on the job as mayor.
Right. Good call. Good point.
I know. We didn't even get to see him swear in. Well, Diaz does think quick on his feet, and he goes back to Junior, and he gets Junior. And Chris, what does Diaz do with Junior?
Well, he kind of just beats the ever-living tar out of him at this point, if I recall correctly, when he finds out that, yeah, you tried to kill me. I don't react quite well to this. And then also finds out that, yeah, none of this ever progressed how I wanted it to. So basically, he just beats the location of the quadrant out of him.
And then I really liked, because then he beats him up, he takes him, uses him as a bomb.
Which is pretty sweet.
That was really cool. And we actually got a lot of Black Siren action. We actually got to see her full meta power. When she screams, they actually show a guy getting like impaled.
From the table. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Reminding us, you know, just how powerful she is. She knows how to take down buildings.
Yeah, let's remember, this is a Laurel who's been a criminal for many years on her Earth that has had to be involved in many kinds of street fights and beating and fight and beatdowns and things like that. So she can fight.
She's got to be careful on how much she uses her powers now. Like, she could have taken down that whole building to begin with, but she didn't. And she didn't because she has to maintain her cover as a Laurel, even though this is another city. If a building came down because of sonic disruption, there is only a few people that we know of, at least, that are known to the media that can do this sort of thing, and they would have started to finger her. And so she couldn't take the building down, and she had to be more surgical.
Well, she also couldn't take the building down because the quadrant was in there. And if she killed the quadrant, that would have ruined Andiaz's plan to become part of the quadrant.
He would have been the quadrant then, though.
But they wouldn't know how to take over for them. They don't know how to reach out to the contacts and get things going. They would have killed them, and there would have been a vacancy at the top, but no way to connect to those on the bottom.
Yeah, we don't know who their second in commands are, because apparently the quadrant controls crime from coast to coast in the United States. That's why it's the quadrant. They've divided the country into fours, you know, so we don't really know what networks they have, who their second in commands are. So they would have come after Diaz, also thwarting his plan. He did want to diplomatically come to the quadrant. Hey, I've done all this hard work in Star City. I have everything under control. It looks like chaos, but it's my chaos. I am the king of this chaos. And all I wanted to do was to bring it to you in a nice, business-like way.
I wanted to make a deal. I wanted to try and set up some business, gain some more respectability in the grand scheme of things. Makes sense.
We finally get to the quadrant. And we don't really know any of their names, but one of them, we know Cartier, the old white guy who's like, you're a street thug, you're in everything. But of course, my favorite is the woman in red. She is amazing. According to the writer, Elizabeth Kim, that's the incredible talented Gina Rivera. She scared the crap out of me even during casting. And yeah, when she told Diaz, talk like your life depends on it, because it does. I believed her.
It was a good line, too.
And she kind of ran the meeting when it came down to Diaz is going to get shot or they're going to save him. And she's like, no, wait a minute. I want to hear more, because this is a business that we're running, and I want to hear more about this business proposition. So, yeah, I think that was a good thing for her to do for the quadrant. And, well, quite frankly, it was the only way the story was going to progress. So,
well, it's the only way they're getting out of there, too. I mean, I think she has to realize to some extent that Diaz brought a pretty powerful meta with him. Then if they really wanted, could drop the whole building on them. Nobody wins then, but...
And she doesn't even really bat an eyelash when Diaz just shoots Cartier.
No, she doesn't, because she knows his beef is only with Cartier. And if he pointed the gun with anybody else, he would have been taken down by the 8+, I don't even remember how many there are gunmen around the room. You know who would have been a shock and a surprise to be part of the quadrant? Walter Steele.
That'd have been cool. I mean, but Walter's a good guy, though.
I know. So that would have been a shock.
But we don't know what Walter's been up to.
Nope. We don't. And he was kind of part of that whole thing that was going on in Starling City.
Yeah, I mean, in a roundabout way, is part of the undertaking.
Yep. So he's got it in him, kind of, sort of, deep down, dark. That's just an aside. That just would have been cool.
Now you got me thinking about that, because I miss Walter. I do. I don't know if you guys do or not.
Yeah, he's got no reason really to come back. I mean, Thea's had her dad for a while, and Moira's gone, and he doesn't have any more business interests in the city. Queen Enterprises isn't Queen Enterprises anymore, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. He doesn't really have a place on the show. While you could have him show up at one point, wasn't he working for a bank now or something like that?
Yeah.
You could have him show up, but the show has evolved past the point where his character is needed, I think you could argue.
This would have been a great way to bring him back, though.
It would have been interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because the only business thing that we have is the Helix Dynamics stuff that's going on, which we'll touch on in a little bit. Well, whoever her name is, which I hope we learn, she invites Diaz to have a seat at the table, and reaches his goal. You know, he has that seat at the table. We, you know, don't know if he's a permanent member of the quadrant yet or if he's a member in training, but he's got his shot. And you might think that's it, but there's a thing in storytelling called Chekhov's gun, where if you introduce a gun at the beginning of the story and you focus in on it, it needs to pay off. And this episode does start off with Diaz at the orphanage getting bullied by Jesse. And he does mention Jesse again. So having Diaz go to Jesse's house and finding him wasn't a surprise for me.
Yeah, it kind of closed off the fact of doing the flashback at the beginning of the episode. And it was a short flash. It was not like the flashbacks that we've had before. Because the flashbacks that we've had before in this series run throughout the episode and they mirror what's going on in the episode. This was just an origins flashback, and that was it. It was one flashback, and then we move on with the rest of the story, and we never go back to it other than the picture is referenced that it's half burned.
I have an issue with how this episode ends with Diaz. I had a Jesse growing up. I had this one girl who focused in on me in elementary school. It got worse in middle school because she got other people to join in on picking on me and things like that. And I know right now, I know what she looks like. I know her name. I know all the other people. And I know they don't know who I am. And that's one of the things that sucks about being a target of a bully. They take a toll on you. But I've had to learn how to deal with that anger and how if you obsess about them, like I haven't gone to look for them on social media or anything like that, because that takes time away from me, from other wonderful things I could be doing and all this type of stuff. We know Diaz is a bad guy. We already know this. Him taking Jesse up to the roof, I didn't have a problem with. Then he pours on the lighter fluid. And it's like, I'm like going, okay, he has spent this entire episode trying to prove that he's more than a street thug. And it's like, okay, well, maybe he's going to go more the psychological route because that is a little bit more involved instead of just straight violence. So pour the liquid on him, have the lighter and go, I've thought about this moment. Maybe I'll burn you. Maybe I won't. You know what? I won't do it tonight. Maybe one day I'll visit your kids who go to Bloodhaven Elementary School or to your wife, Linda, who works at the diner at 4th and Main. And he could tell Jesse, like, he knows all these things about him and could have threatened him that way. Because Jesse's a regular guy now. He would have peed his pants because he's tied up. He has lighter fluid on him. He knows he's in danger, but then just to like burn the guy alive.
As soon as he saw Laurel in without the wig, you know, plain old Laurel Lance,
he was toast then.
Yeah, I knew he was dead. I didn't know he was going to get burned, but I knew he was dead. And the burning makes sense to me just because that's the hurt that Jesse had inflicted on Ricardo back in the orphanage. But you're right, that is holding, I mean, that's what distinguishes him as a bad guy versus a good guy, because he's been holding on to this grudge for a long time and he's willing to do the ultimate for it, to solve it in his mind, even though clearly Jesse did not get the upper hand in life.
I like that Laurel brought up Zoom. She's like, I knew someone who was consumed by hate, who was obsessed. It consumed him and it ruined him. And Diaz is like, well, I named my fear the dragon and I have control of the dragon. The writers seem to have been setting Diaz up to be an intelligent crime lord. Someone who is going to have this professional facade, public facade, kind of like Lex Luthor, but then be a criminal in the shadows and stuff, having that intelligence in order to pull that off. But him just like burning him and just sort of, it just seems so pointless. Don't go hunting your bullies down. Don't be obsessed with them and definitely don't burn them alive. But he could have still been a bad guy without doing that. I don't know if it's also that, and if it's also a Laurel trigger, because that was another thing when I rewatched the episode, the camera did focus in on her.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's in part big, hey, this guy's a bad guy. We told you how bad he is. This is how bad he is. And it's an easy way narratively to express the fact is that he lights a guy on fire that tormented him. But more importantly, we've seen Black Siren waver back and forth. This season's been a lot about, oh, can she be redeemed? Is she redeemable? You start to see her wavering towards what Diaz is doing. And I think part of it is, yes, that Laurel has killed and probably killed fairly regularly, but she doesn't kill for fun. She kills to get things done. Whereas this is one of the times we're seeing Diaz take someone out, not to advance the plan, not to move up and up the chain or anything, but simply for revenge. And you don't see Black Siren killing for revenge. She kills to protect herself and to advance. So I think it creates a difference between the two of them.
In the past, she has killed a little bit more indiscriminately, but she's not dumb either. And for Diaz to have to lead her through what he's doing, and then all of a sudden she gets it. Like, they had the one talk, and I can't remember the dialogue, but basically he said, well, I took care of a city, but now I can be part of the crime lords for a whole continent. And then just then she gets it. It's like, what do you think he's talking to the Quadern about to begin with? Yeah, he wants a seat at the table. So that little revelation and that smile on her face, I think, was probably bad writing along the way, or maybe that was just to indicate to the little kids that watch this show that, yeah, that's really what he's doing. I don't know. Didn't fit for me, though.
I don't know. I guess it because it hit me on this level of being with the whole bullying and everything. I don't know. I just expected, I guess that's what it is. Because of the whole entire episode of him saying this was my 5-year plan, and he criticizes Laurel. He tells her, you know, when I get knocked down, I get up. And she's like, yeah, I get up too. I just don't get stupid.
Right. Well, he did take risks. He did take unnecessary risk, in my opinion. The whole, I'm going to fetch this guy and they're not going to kill me afterwards. I thought that was not smart. It's also not smart to only approach one of the members of the Quadern. You'd want to approach at least a couple just to make sure that your offer was heard across the table rather than just depending on one proffer. So, yeah, like I said, he's not, I won't say deserving, but he's not omnipotent. He's not the perfect crime lord. And I don't know if any of them really are or not. I don't know. I'm not a crime lord. But that's definitely some things. And yeah, okay, so the bullying thing was a large motivator. And again, this goes back to, we saw one scene, a couple of minutes, and that's it. If this was permeated throughout the entire season, or at least half season, then we might get a little bit more of his motivation than that. It's hard for me to tell because I'm not the showrunners. I'm not the writers. I don't know how much time they really had to work with Kirk. I don't know if he was available for the whole season or he just shot the things that he was called in for. Like, he had specific shoot days in his contract. I don't know.
Yeah. And the whole bullied orphan. Sometimes I just want people to want to be bad just to be bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, does every villain need to have a tragic backstory?
Well, on this show, evidently, yes. If we start going through most of their backstories.
Every single one. Yeah, because they don't have a tragic backstory that can become a hero, right?
Are we going to redeem Diaz now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they'll try to. You know, along the lines of Diaz, by the way, and the flashbacks and the young actor, this was not the first time that Kirk Acevedo was portrayed by a youthful actor. Now, in this episode, an actor, a boy by the name of Max Archibald, played a young Kirk Acevedo, or a young dragon. But over on 12 Monkeys, Kirk was portrayed by not one, but two young boys, Jordan James and Nicholas Hamazia. So he's been portrayed by three youthful actors just in the last few years.
Well, that's interesting. So, SP, what do you think of Diaz now as an adversary for Oliver?
Well, I think he's, as far as we're the adversaries, he's as good as any of the others. He's as good as last year's, that's for sure. Might not be on the level of the Leon Yu foes or you know, the Ra's al Ghul foes, but he's definitely worthy of an, especially a degraded Oliver. And this is a degraded Oliver. I mean, he's lone wolfing it, as we mentioned before, and he's very competent individually and skilled at combat. So I think he's got a shot, but I think ultimately Oliver, if he ever gets his head screwed on straight, which I don't even think his head is screwed on straight now, as evidenced by the one scene he was in this week, I think he's no match for Dragon. But once Oliver figures out what's going on, not only with Dragon, but himself, I think we'll pull through just fine.
Chris, what about you?
I'm kind of ambivalent on it. I mean, at least next week we'll finally get a confrontation that might result in some fighting between the two of them on episode 20. I just feel like we've waited a long time and there hasn't really been a great way of ratcheting up that tension to have this confrontation between the two of them. He's one of the weaker of the Arrow villains we've had in the 6 seasons so far. I enjoy the character, but the whole him and Oliver dynamic of wanting to go at each other, it's not really there. He cares more about, I want Star City. Star City's my objective. You're just in the way. Everything else has been a lot more personal when it comes to the Green Arrow and the adversaries.
Yeah, they've had a pacing problem all season. You had the Caden James, and all of a sudden they wanted to split up the team. And then now we have Diaz. It feels like they took a puzzle, shook it up, and just dumped it on a coffee table and put about 2/3 of it together and went, that's enough.
Well, I think the results of that are seen in our Prime news story later on. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Although I think this has been building for years. I don't think this is just this specific year. And I think if they wanted to, they could have turned the tables and made this into Arrow's finest and last season. And they didn't. They stretched it and they want to go for something else. And they got it. Okay, so congratulations. You got another season. But there's a catch, and we'll talk about that later.
So, Chris, we got some Felicity and Curtis action.
Yeah.
Well, not action.
They're doing Helix things.
They're sort of remembering they have a business they need to run and get off the ground. I'm kind of glad they revisited it, but I don't understand the tension. And then Felicity's like, oh, I apologize for the team thing. Wait, what? What? Renee pulled a damn axe out of a tree and tried to kill your husband. Why are you apologizing for the team thing?
Renee was going to, and probably still is, going to testify against Oliver just to save his daughter. Yeah. There's still that schism between the two sides.
The whole thing with this, you put Renee in the hospital thing, I keep sitting there, and every time it comes up, and it came up again this time, I'm like, well, yeah, because he attacked him with an axe. It's not like he was fighting to disable or anything. He was fighting to freaking kill Oliver, to lop off a limb. What is he supposed to do? Just like, okay, let me block everything here. Let me wait until I have an opening to just kind of whittle you down. No, fight back. Fight force with force. And that one frustrates me still.
I'm not complaining too much about him because we don't get a Hoss this episode, and I'm fine with that.
Fair enough. But yes, they start working, sort of. Then there's more of Felicity's basically just burying herself in her work so that she doesn't have to acknowledge the fact that she's not there as Overwatch looking to see what Oliver's doing. She doesn't know what's going on, and she's just as in the dark as the rest of us, especially when there's an explosion that makes it look like the Green Arrow is dead.
It's not like she never worked from home to begin with about the bunker thing. I mean, she's done stuff from her house before. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to believe.
Not only that, but Oliver never knows when his outfits are bugged.
Yeah, no, right.
So why hasn't she just put a, you know, sewn a bug into the collar and just been kind of like, have you ever seen those people on dates where one of them is like into it, but the other one's kind of like looking down at like their phone. Like, yeah, I know. Yeah, keep talking. Oh, I'm watching the football game. It just seems like Felicity could have been like doing Helix things and then looking over at her thing, showing that her man is, and not really been freaked out about it.
Because plot.
There you go.
I will take that.
And I didn't say it how Neil says it because it was a weak excuse to begin with. So I just, okay, because plot. It doesn't deserve the more majestic version that Neil brings forth.
It's true.
SP, any last thoughts about the episode?
Yeah, just one, and I think we've covered this years ago, but in case we haven't, so the SUV that Diaz is driving around pulls up in front of the Quadrant's hotel or whatever before they'd send in the human bomb, and you get to see a good shot of the license plate. This is not the first time in the entire series that we've seen a license plate. They shoot in Vancouver, this is well known, and they are doctored British Columbia license plates, and on the top they all say Land of Mist, and that is indicative of the area where Star City is supposed to be, Land of Mist. So all the license plates will have that little slogan on top, Land of Mist. It is not an actual license plate, it's a doctored license plate, and I actually don't know if it's a filmed license plate, like they have a prop that they throw on cars, or if it's a CGI license plate, but it's what it is, and I did not run to ground what the numbers mean on it. I'm sure it means something, but I just didn't run it to ground.
Chris, anything else you want to cover?
I think I've touched on most of my stuff. It's good to get more backstory on Diaz, but like SP said earlier in the show, I think we've been better served having it sprinkled in than one dedicated episode to him.
That is true. Well, next week's episode is called Shifting Allegiances. It's going to be Season 6, Episode 20. It will air Thursday, April 26, 2018. Oliver turns to an old friend to help battle Diaz. Meanwhile, Renee is out of the hospital, but has a hard time readjusting to life as Wild Dog. Maybe he can't actually say the word Haas.
He had a Haasectomy?
Yeah, he just can't form those syllables.
God willing.
And also Lance discovers something shocking about Black Siren. Like, maybe she can make a quiche. Who knows?
I want a quiche.
I want flan.
Episodes directed by Alexandra LaRoche and written by Wendy Miracle and Rebecca Bellotto.
Interesting. All right, we'll get into more of that in the news, which is, by the way, where we're headed. Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of Starling Tribune Tower, over on Earth 2, it's the weekly news roundup with chief news anchor Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
So there's really only one big news story this week to talk about, and that is the showrunner we kept teasing all show, Arrow. Beth Schwartz named new showrunner. Wendy Miracle exits. Yeah. Co-executive producer Beth Schwartz is promoted to executive producer and sole showrunner for the upcoming seventh season. Current Arrow executive producer slash co-showrunner Wendy Miracle is departing at the end of the current season. Mark Guggenheim is taking a back seat on the two series he co-created and has been executive producing, co-showrunning Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. He is transitioning to an executive consultant role on both shows. Current Legends co-showrunner Clemmer will become the sole showrunner in the upcoming fourth season. This is interesting to find out that Guggenheim was also the showrunner. I thought Miracle was the only one. So learning that Guggenheim was a co-one kind of explains a few things.
Well, maybe. At the beginning of the year, we said that Wendy Miracle was going to be the sole showrunner. I mean, that was the stories they put out there. Them coming out that said Mark Guggenheim has been a big part of the show, but I don't think he was the showrunner for the show this season. I think Wendy Miracle was the sole showrunner.
Yeah. But we have Beth Schwartz. So Beth Schwartz has been with the show since 2012. She's written 24 episodes, been the executive story editor on 23, co-executive producer on 30 episodes. So she's been with the series forever. What do we think of Beth being the only showrunner next season?
I want to step back and I want to say Mark Guggenheim, I think, did a good job from what he did. I think he was hamstrung in all the stories that he brought forward with the DC movie universe. I think the Suicide Squad, and we've seen Deathstroke and a couple other characters that have been pulled back specifically because DC doesn't want them to be used in TV and the movie universe at the same time. So I think Mark did pretty good with what he had. I think Wendy, judging by her performance this year, I think she was in a little bit over her head. And I think she didn't take the show in the creative direction that it needed. Yes, she did an okay job, but she didn't do a phenomenal job. And I'll talk more about what I think about Winnie Miracle as we get to a future news story. Now, Beth Schwartz, on the other hand, whenever a actual episode came up that she was writing, I think I've enjoyed. I'm going to have to go back and take a look at the episode list of everything that she's written. But I always remember seeing her name and thinking, oh, good, it's the episode that Beth has written. And I have enjoyed those for the most part. So far, okay. But I'm going to have to do a little bit more research.
There's one thing in the Arrow subreddit's been very interesting because they're not big fans of neither Wendy nor Mark. They're kind of excited, it seems like. Now, remember, the Arrow subreddit can be fairly toxic at times about Beth Schwartz joining the crew until they found one of the tweets that she wrote, which was about the Olicity wedding reception. It was like, I had done a whole episode about this, and then they promptly went off the rails again. So I'm not sure she meant that seriously or more to screw with some people like that. But like SP said, if you go and look at a lot of the episodes she's done, they've been pretty good for the most part. So I'm cautiously optimistic going forward to see how they shape things back into being more like the show we've come to like. Now, the real problem is they've made a big point of saying, oh, the season's going to end on this great note. It's going to be a twist we can never recover from. La-di-da-di-da. So does that put her in a good or bad position going forward, depending on what they do? I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how season 6 ends.
I'm going to start following Beth Schwartz a lot more closely. I'm going to be paying attention. I can't remember if she has a Twitter account or not, but I'm going to be paying attention to that. I'm going to be paying attention to her interviews and her Conic appearances this spring. And then they're going to go into writer's room for about a month and a half, 2 months or whatever. And then in the fall, when San Diego Comic-Con comes around and that schedule, I think San Diego Comic-Con is like the last weekend of July. So from that on in, we're going to get some initial creative decisions that she's been making. And then they'll come out with panels, I'm guessing, or interviews. And we'll get more of the direction of the show there. But she's going to be left with wherever we are with the season finale. So you have to give her a pass for the first quarter season, maybe half a season, because she's going to have to take the remnants of whatever has happened and then transition. And that will be interesting to see how she does that.
Yeah, the real question is, are the fans going to stick around for that? Because I'm not trying to be all negative, but we've seen the ratings have been dipping and dipping. We've got a new showrunner on the horizon, which would be a reason for optimism. But if we go out with a whimper instead of a bang at this season, you've got a whole off season of people getting dismayed by the outcome of the show and what's happening and what happens when the next season starts. How do you bring them back in? There needs to be a hook of some kind so that people who are getting tired of it get drawn back in.
So two things. First of all, the rest of the shows are not doing all that great in the ratings right now. And me personally, I didn't care for the four of the shows last week. I know a lot of people actually liked the Black Lightning season finale, and Legends of Tomorrow is done, so that's not part of this conversation. But I think across the board, CW is having a little bit of issue with their shows, and I think they need to either coalesce or spring some free and then bolster up what they have. And the other thing is, we don't know how many episodes they're going to have. That has not been announced yet.
Very good point.
One of the things I'm taking away from this is that it seems either just this season or maybe starting last season, there seems to have been a lot of co-things. Even if Wendy was the sole showrunner, it seems as though Mark had his finger in there. And when you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen, a lot of people trying to steer the same ship, it can go off course. And maybe that's been part of the problem. And now if we've got one just for Arrow, there seems to be just going to be one for Legends. Hopefully this is what each show needs, is to go have one focus and one captain and go, this is what we need. This is our vision. And this is how we can stay consistent throughout the entire season.
Yeah, but if she fails, you know, that's, even if the ratings are down, if it's a good story, I'll give her a pass because she's starting from ground zero, really. So if she is able to deliver a good season, that'll be great. But we'll wait and see. I mean, this is unknown as far as a showrunner. So we'll see what happens here.
I am optimistic. I am going to give Beth the benefit of the doubt. And I'm hoping that all of them get together over the summer and they sit down with each other and they are honest about what works. There's a reason why, even though Legends doesn't have high ratings, there are reasons why people write about it constantly, because it's fun. There's a good dynamic. They're doing weird stuff. There's a consistent feel to it. Not a lot of people are writing about Supergirl and Flash and not really writing about Arrow in that same way. So hopefully Beth can get Arrow back to that, make him the man I fell in love with. Like, this is who we fell in love with. This is who we married.
Put him on the salmon ladder, for crying out loud. Do it. Do it.
Take his shirt off, Beth. Take it off.
Beth, you personally, I want to see you take off Stephen Amell's shirt.
Yes. Do it, Beth. Take it off. You can do it, girl. Ugh. Okay, so Chris, has Wendy Miracle been unemployed long?
Not for long, it seems like. Deadline had an interesting story saying, coming off a 6-season stint on the CW's Arrow, the last three as executive producer / co-showrunner, Wendy Miracle has signed an overall deal with ABC Studios. Under this multi-year pact, Miracle, a sought-after drama writer, will develop new projects for broadcast, cable, and streaming services. The quote from ABC Studios president Mark Patrick Moran was, "Wendy is one of the most talented storytellers working in television, and we're thrilled to have her on the ABC Studios team." Now, SP, you have thoughts and feelings on this, don't you?
I do. I actually have strong feelings and thoughts on this. So, Michael Bay, he's ruined a childhood franchise of mine called The Transformers, and I will never see another Michael Bay movie in the theater ever again. Won't do it. No matter what he does, I will not go see it in the theater. Whatever series Fox, Sci-Fi, and NBC come out with, I will not see first season anymore. I will let that slide, and I will let them get to 3 seasons before I go all in, because they have a history of taking the geek genre shows that I like, ruining them, and driving them into the ground, and by season 3, they're either canceled or worthless. Wendy Miracle, if she indeed was one of the strong architects behind this season, I can't necessarily follow her around. So whatever show she's a part of that she co-creates, or more importantly, if she's a producer or a showrunner on, I'm going to have to step back from that, and I'm going to have to wait and see, because I'm not a fan of what she's done so far with this series. In retrospect, you know, we had high hopes going into it, and we've all had issues. I mean, we are three people that used to love Arrow, and now we're searching for reasons to find a love for Arrow, and it's story driven, and she's part of it. So yeah, maybe she just needed to move on to something else, but I'm going to be very cautious about approaching any property that she's a part of. And I think ABC is searching for something here, maybe trying to bring in new blood or something, but I don't think she's going to be the Nirvana that they think she is.
There's something to be said for a change of scenery, and maybe that's what it takes here, is that things kind of came into a rut with Arrow and something fresh is needed. I don't know. In all honesty, though, when it comes to me on a lot of these shows, I don't necessarily look at the showrunners first, second, or even third on these things. I'm more looking at whatever trailers come out, what the cast are that are put together and things like that when I go to make my decision. That being said, really the only thing I watch on ABC currently, I think, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm super far behind on that, so I really don't think this is going to impact me one way or another. Now, what I wonder is if this is a hire to pick up the gap that you have from Shonda Rhimes getting hired away by Netflix to develop all of the same content she was doing there, but for Netflix. So they're filling a gap.
I was going to say that.
Great minds think alike.
Yep.
Yeah, and I knew that too, but it just comes... The only other property that I've tried on ABC lately has been Designated Survivor. And while that had a strong first 4 episodes, 5 episodes, they are in a constant turmoil with different showrunners. I think 4 different showrunners in the first year. And you can definitely tell the show still suffers today. I have it on the background when I'm doing chores or something like that.
Michael J. Fox, they've got that going for him.
And unfortunately, he's coming in as a strong adversary. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, that's about it for the news. As you know, I live tweet this show. And one of the things that I tweeted was I like that Diaz went all John Wick in there. And I had a little gif of John Wick because that was Diaz's fighting style with the gun. I'm like, going, oh, wow, that's so John Wick. Well, James Bamford and Kirk Acevedo liked that tweet. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Indeed. And thanks for the fight scenes in this episode. And I know I said earlier that they were not Arrow's pinnacle, but they were still good fights to watch and entertaining.
Yep, agreed.
Yes. Now, Chris, we are part of a larger network, and there are other podcasts on this network, correct?
That's right, Michelle. We are part of the Gunna Geek Network. There's about 25 plus different shows in the network that cover a variety of topics. You've got some like us. We're the Starling Tribune. We talk about primarily Arrow and sometimes the greater Arrow universe. But there's things that are much broader in flavor. What I'm trying to say is we've got all sorts of shows over at the Gunna Geek Network you should check out. And while I would love to encourage you to say go check them all out and tell you all about them, we don't have the time, but I do have time to tell you about one show to give you a little taste of it and say, hey guys, maybe you should go check this one out. And I want to talk to you guys about the most recent episode of the Intellectual podcast entitled David and Whitney Catch Up. Intellectual hosts David and Whitney take an episode to catch up on all the things that have happened to the Intellectuals since the start of the year and to congratulate each other on their new successes and on their nominations for the 2018 San Diego Film Awards. So congratulations, and guys, go check out the Intellectual podcast over at GunnaGeek.com. But that is going to start wrapping us up, so a big thank you to everyone who did participate in the chat room over at Geeks.live, but also to those of you that catch the replay over on our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/GunnaGeek, or just by downloading the audio podcast over at StarlingTribune.com.
And you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live and chime in with the live chat. That would be great. And we are live at 6 p.m. Eastern or 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter. And you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the close of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Crime Lord.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Hossectomy.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with Beth, take that shirt off. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.
Man, don't forget we get Sarah in the final episode too, so that could lead into a guest appearance in the first episode next year.
Sarah V. Black Siren is what I'm guessing still, but who knows?
And she looks great with her. That was something. Did you guys see her Instagram post where, you know, like she's in her sports thing?
Yeah. Did you see Stephen Amell's response? Best abs on Arrow.
Yeah. Oh, Sarah, you mean, or Laurel?
Yeah. Katie Lotz was, she posted that picture and she gets, I cannot believe this, but she gets body shamed.
She's obviously older, right? She looks a lot older than she did at the start of the show when she was brought on, but she looks really good.
She's jacked too.
Yeah. So screw those people that are shaming.
Yeah.
They all look older because it's been 6 years.
I I don't have a problem with it. If it sounded like I had a problem with it, I'm sorry. But I mean, she does look older. So she's not the doll that she was, you know, 6-7 years ago, but she looks really good.
Yeah. So I'm just like, you know what? Take all their shirts off. We're just going to have a topless season 7 of Arrow. There we go. I am equal opportunity shirts off. Just take them, free all the nipples. There we go.
Free the nipples. That's,
there we go. That's episode 1 of season 7 of Arrow.
Free the nipples.
Free the nipples. The nipples are free. Enjoy.